The South African police force faces civil claims of more than 14 billion for unlawful arrests and detentions, and another 741 million for shooting incidents involving members of the public. We speak to former Western Province Provincial Commissioner, Dr. Leonard Marx. Welcome, sir.
Good morning.
Well, I think you know a lot about the use of force by the police and abuse of police powers. You did that thesis for your doctorate.
Yes, of course. Chris, thanks for the question. Let me say, you know, it is regrettable to see that the police, have so many claims against them for things which they could prevent. Now, my thesis, doctoral thesis, was about the reason for the police's use of excessive force and the dwindling confidence in their ability to protect human rights in South Africa. Now, the police is, in terms of the Constitution, Section 2053, mandated to use force, meaning that three states that the police should enforce the law and protect the citizens of this country in their property. Now, once you enforce the law, you get some resistance and you can use force. Now, that is what the Constitution put that obligation on the police to create a safe environment for the citizens of South Africa. And in doing so, they might use force. But that force is not unlimited. The force is regulated by Section 39 and Section 49(2) of the Criminal Procedure Act, which regulate that force to what an extent can the police use force. That means that once the police use force, there's certain criteria that they have to comply with. First, the use of force must be necessary, it must be reasonable, and lastly, it must be proportionate to the threat. Now, it means in simple terms that you can't use a sledgehammer to crack a nut. You understand? So, as simple as that. So, there are cases in before the Criminal Procedure Act was amended in the old pre-democracy. That the police could kill somebody who just stole a lemon or an orange because it falls within the criteria of the Section 1 criminal, Schedule 1 of the Criminal Force Act. So, and that was problematic. And there were two cases which actually led to the amendment of the Criminal Procedure Act. And that was the Walter case, where the son and father cornered a thief in their shop, and he ran and they shot him and killed him. And the other one was the Govender case, where the police officer chased a youngster with a stolen vehicle. The youngster jumped out and he ran away from the police, and the police shot and killed him. Now, the SCA at the time, before the Constitution Court actually intervened, disagreed with the courts ad quo, the court of first instance, to say that the crime was committed within the schedule and the police act within the time frame of their responsibilities and within the confines of the law. So they said, no, there must be a threat towards the officer or towards other people. If the person runs away, there's no need to kill him. However, there is an additional requirement or give permission to the police that in instances where somebody runs away, but still have the risk to endanger other people, then the police can shoot. But if the police can arrest that person on another day at another event without killing or shooting at that person, then the police must follow that option. So it is a critical thing. And as you know, that the police officers who's been enlisted They've got only a matric certificate. Now, judges in this country, even the chief justice, they don't have the authority in law to impose the death penalty. But here, that responsibility to take a life is then cascaded down to a matric or even less matric in law enforcement to decide when to take a life in a split second once their lives are under threat or other people's lives are under threat and they have to act and they use their weapons and they shoot and may kill that person. But you see, it's very difficult for that person because the judges can take months, even years, to decide whether that police officer acted within the confines of the law and did not exceed the limitations of the use of force. So it's a very precarious situation in which police officers and law enforcement in general find themselves. Now, you know, but on the other hand, we must not allow, as ordinary citizens, there's a lot of criticism in the KwaZulu-Natal where people got killed and so on. And it's also clear, it's common cause, that the community celebrated those killings because they are sick and tired of criminality. But the problem is that, and there are also those who criticize it, you know, they criticize it. But we must be careful that we don't replace our theoretical and sanitized world of our imagination to replace the difficult and complex world that the police are facing on a daily basis. So that is very important. Now, that in 2021-22 financial year, the police had outstanding civil claims of 112.1 billion rand in total. Not one financial year, that financial year and all other outstanding financial years. Claims together was 112.1, of which a significant amount of that civil claims was for unlawful arrest and detention, assault and killings of people. So, and that placed a huge burden on the police financial resources. And as you actually indicated, that 14 billion was for the 2023-24 financial year, institute, the claims instituted against the police. But it's not to say that the whole amount is going to be paid out because there are negotiations, there are some sort of bargaining, settlements, discussions for lesser amounts to fast track the finalization of the total claim. Now, it is so that police officers act within the scope of their employment. They then create a vicarious liability. The police got a vicarious liability because of those police officers who acted in the scope of their work and responsibilities. But as a result of this unlawful arrest and detention, the question which arises is, how much trust got the police in them from the public trust in the police? Now, in 2021, the Human Size Research Council survey indicated at that stage that trust in the police was 27%. And last year in the 2024, the Human Size Research Council survey indicated that those 27% decreased to 24%. And that was even before those Mkhwanazi allegations. Now you can
sorry to interrupt you, General. I want to go to those allegations now made by the KwaZulu.
That's right.
So KwaZulu Natal General Mkhwanazi.
That's right. Well, what I wanted to say is you can expect that as a result of those allegations, that public trust in the police is less than 20%, 22%, as indicated last year. Yeah, as far as the Mkhwanazi issue is concerned, It's very serious allegations. You must understand, we are used to, almost used as a new normal, that the police are involved in corruption. But in this case, the allegations involved the judiciary as well. So that made it very, very problematic. And on the other hand, he referred to a cartel, which is now infiltrating the criminal justice system. And you must understand the South African Police Service is the primary entry point to the criminal justice system. And if something things goes wrong in the police, that it does have a domino effect on the rest of the criminal justice system. So it is very important that these allegations are properly investigated and find that whether there is any substance to it, whether there's prima facie evidence which needs further investigation, and the whole issue should be dealt with thoroughly, without fear. So all eyes are actually on this commission who is actually appointed by the president. We see what is the outcome there.
Meanwhile, what do you make of that letter written by the police minister now on special leave to disband the political killings task team?
You know, the letter which was circulated on social media and purports to be the letter of coming from the minister Mkhulu is, in my view, a bit confusing and problematic, in the sense that I studied this letter, and nowhere in the letter could I find that the minister refers to that he received a briefing by this political killing staff team, which put him in a position to evaluate them and to assess them whether they are still productive or not. And then the mere fact that he wrote the letter to instruct the National Commissioner to close it, I think that was actually, an operational interference, in my view. And the minister, in my view, acted beyond the purview of his responsibilities. You must understand that the minister's powers arise from Section 206(1) of the Constitution, which states that the minister is responsible to develop policy, consulting with the 9 MECs in the country, in the provinces, and then develop a policy. Now, the policy, which means it's a policy, a document, which has been drafted and placed before cabinet, discussed and approved. That is policy. Policy is not a letter which you send out to follow. On the other hand, Section 207(1) states that the president, the head of state, can appoint a man or a woman as national commissioner to control the police. It means management as well as operational functions. And that is the responsibility of the national commissioner. Now, what is for me problematic with that letter, the national commissioner was interviewed about certain operational and management issues, and he was questioned about this letter and the closing of the political killing stars team. And he said that he did not give any instruction for the closing thereof. He didn't sign any letter. That was more or less his words. Now, in other words, he defied the minister and ignore the minister's instruction, which is instruction. Now, that created problems in itself. It appears the fact that the National Commissioner didn't act against Commissioner Mkhwanazi, of Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi, inferred that he sided with General Mkhwanazi. He supported his view because there's no action taken for the press conference, which is unprecedented, of police officers you know, conducting such press conferences. And now the refusal to execute the instruction of the minister or the request, whoever, whatever way you interpret it, creates a problem of a relationship, a trust relationship between the minister and the national commissioner. Now, the national commissioner is now temporary on so-called special leave, which is in the powers. It's in the powers of the president to place the minister on special leave. Now, my question is: if the minister come back, the two of them is not gonna work together properly. The one is not trusting the other one. Now, my view in this instance is one of them have to leave. They has to leave. One of them has to leave. Either it's the minister who's not returning and the new minister become permanent, or the minister returns and the national commissioner and Nkwanazi exit. So that either one must happen. One of those things needs to take place. Because if you put the minister back and the national commissioners in his office, as a result of this irreparable trust relationship, it will affect the rest of the police and ultimately negatively affecting a service delivery to the people. So the president at that stage have to decide once he gets his preliminary report from the commission to decide what actions needs to be taken with regards to this particular situation. But we must understand that even criminals in this country got rights, and so does the minister Mtunu got rights, and the president within his power, we have to make sure that there's procedural and substantial fairness in dealing with the minister. So the courts are very clear. Their political parties are not above the law. They have to comply with the rules of natural justice. And I think, and that is what the president actually is doing. Therefore, I praise the minister on special leave. And on the other hand, he waits for the report to come in order for him to decide what is the relevant and necessary action to be taken.
What do you think of the acting police minister, Mr. Feroz Khatralia?
In my view, and he was a MEC for community safety in KwaZulu-Natal. And I monitored him at the time, and I think that he got experience with regards to the police, or not on the national level, but at the provincial level. But what happened at the provincial level is automatically also happening at the national level, because it's a national structure. On the other hand, he is a lawyer, which I think will actually make sure that he stays in his lane, and he's not going to make the same mistakes than his predecessor, minister, who's actually on special leave, and that he will have. He's actually in a very good position. You've got two deputies, and he's also entitled to two advisors. And he's in a position to execute excellent oversight over the police. There are certain ways how you can act properly and execute oversight very, very specific and effectively on the police without interfering with their operations, but keep them accountable for what they are supposed to do. So it is just, and I hope that he's going to be advised accordingly to do what is right. But I think he can be a success if he works together with the national commissioner and he listened to advice, and himself is a legal practitioner or a lecturer, and he knows what the Constitution says and what to what extent is his powers.
What do you make of former President Jacob Zuma's threats and ultimatum to President Cyril Ramaphosa over his handling of this crisis in the police force? I think they've given him until Friday to resign. Otherwise, there'll be more legal action and political mobilization.
You know, that is, in my view, politics. Just politics. The court already decided on this particular issue. And I think the commission which the president instituted, although the majority of South Africans is not happy with the commission, we don't trust the commission, because the outcomes in the past was not effective and the recommendations not implemented. That is the view of the people. But personally, I think that the president did the right thing. Because of the extent of this allegations, it is very, very serious. We can become a banana republic if cartels is now managing and ruling the criminal justice system. And therefore, the commission is not only investigating this allegations per se, but also what is going on in the police, the metro police, in the criminal justice, in the judiciary as well. So it's a huge and a very complex investigation which is going to be conducted. And I believe that the courts already pronounced on this particular issue as far as the powers of the president is concerned. And I think the president acted within the purview of the constitution and the powers vested in him as head of state. So what MKP, concern, I think that is just, you know, they bark against up the wrong tree, and their threat is actually, just political.
Okay. Can confidence be restored in the South African police force? If so, what needs to be done for that to happen?
You know, thanks for the question, Chris. You know, after the advent of democracy in 1994, President Mandela appointed George Fivers as the National Commissioner of Police. I just want to say, President Mandela said once, "I have fought against white domination. I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all peoples of all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities," unquote. Fivers has four deputies. Fivers is a white person. Then he had Bester. General Bester is a white person. He had General Manuel as a colored. He had General Lavisa as an African. And he had General Chetty as Indian. So for us, you know, down there, we look up to the leadership. And that leadership represented actually the statement made by the late President Mandela, the Rainbow Nation. And it gave us hope that if we perform, we can also reach the top level. That's why I studied and I work hard to prove that I'm competent to be elected in those positions. That's why I reached at the age of 38 the rank of Lieutenant General as Provincial Western Cape Police Commissioner. The youngest in the country, their record is not actually, you know, replaced. But currently, what you experience currently is that the National Commissioner, together with his deputies, is one race, black. The nine provincial commissioners, all of them are black. Pure black. Now that in itself does not represent the different race groups in South Africa. And I don't think that colors, whites, and Indians are so stupid that they don't have the necessary qualifications and experience not to be elected or appointed in those positions to represent. But then I blame here the national minister then, and that was Becky Caled, because the police regulations 47 states very clearly, from the rank of major general to general, of lieutenant general, the national commissioner must consult him. And he can only appoint from major general upwards in consultation with the minister. That means the national commissioner cannot appoint people in those ranks if the national minister does not consent to that. Now, that is, I blame him for that. So, and I hope that the commission address that particular issue and remove Section 47 of the police regulations from that regulations, so that people can be appointed. And there's, no, that is in itself political interference, where the minister must agree to an appointment. Now, how can you keep a national commissioner responsible to do the right job and choose the people which he think got the relevant education and the relevant experience to do the job? In this case, the minister will then decide what is good enough for you to work with. And people then is not really loyal then to the national commissioner, which must be the case, but loyal to the politician, because the politician will manage the national commissioner to say, appoint so-and-so in that particular position. So that is in itself political interference, and I hope that the commission look at that particular issue and recommend that that must be removed to allow the national commissioner to appoint the people he or she believes is competent to assist her or him to do the job and serve the people of South Africa. On the other hand, corruption is rife in the police. This morning, I read in the Burger that there's more people, police officers now appearing today in court for corruption. And so every second day almost, you find that police officers are actually in court for corruption. Now, that brings me to this point of a lack of leadership. You know, there are people appointed without any qualifications, relevant qualifications, not police officers, but people imported from outside into the police and been given military ranks, senior ranks of brigadiers and colonels, whatever the case may be. And those people are responsible now to lead salted police officers with years of experience. You know, that in itself demoralizes those committed police officers. Then you got also another problem where clerks, people who were previously clerks in the police, those clerks received, and I know a lot of them, they were promoted from clerk to captains and placed, did not receive police training and placed in charge of detective services as well as operationals. So, you know, those things are the reasons why we are where we are at the crossroads with the police in South Africa. And that thing must be rectified. Otherwise, we don't have hope. We will be on our own if there's no proper intervention. Then, of course, you have your communities, which needs to be consulted, take part as those GPFs in your neighborhood watches and so on. But on the other hand, you've got a huge and a serious scarcity of police officers. You know, the police officers stay now for years, years on 180. It moved from 180, 185, then back to 170, depends on who resigns, you know? and the community are increasing. And then you got, on the other hand, private security increasing. And I think in 2012, it was 437. And the financial year, I think 2024, it was at 580,000 employed private security. So private security grew. Why? Because the middle class and the rich lost confidence in the police effectiveness. And they pay now extra, besides their tax, which pays for the police, pay extra for private security. And I pay private security. Because private security, within 3 minutes, will be at my place. You know, that is the guarantee, more or less, what they give us, because they saturate the residential areas. So those are the things. Until the police is not sanitized from political interference, and a proper management is in place, my research also indicates, and I quoted other researchers who are of the view that the only way that the police can be trusted and, you know, and revamp, or what you call it, overall, is to replace the management, top management, totally down, and bring in other management. But I am a bit cautious here. You can't bring private people in. It must be people within the service. The police got a different culture. It's not like SABC or SA Breweries or all that stuff. It's not like that. It's not like an ordinary private company. The police got a particular culture, and there's a particular way that you talk to police officers to win their confidence, you know, and commit them to service delivery, encourage them. So it's a strategy, and you must understand the thinking of the police, and you must understand that particular, criteria on which the police actually operates. So yes, the only way that we can restore trust in the police is you have to overhaul the police, and I hope that the Commission of Inquiry will make those recommendations.
Thank you. That was the former Western Cape Police Commissioner, Dr. Lennard Max, speaking to Biz News, and I am Chris Steyn. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.